This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This episode is brought to you by Kia's first three-row, all-electric SUV, the Kia EV9. With available all-wheel drive and seating for up to seven adults. With 0-60 speed that thrills you 1 minute and available lounge seats that unwind you the next. Visit kia.com/EV9 to learn more. Ask your Kia dealer for availability. No system, no matter how advanced, can compensate for all driver error and or driving conditions. Always drive safely.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome to the latest moments of Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Big hour coming your way. Jason Chaffetz in studio. Perfect to break this down because we have a lot going on today. Former House Oversight Committee Chair. We got Intel hearings going on. We have Robert Hur's hearings going on and so much more. Also have the latest on the NIL. There's going to be a roundtable conducted by Ted Cruz. And Joe Manchin, I believe, is going to be on that panel, too. He's also an expert in this area. And Nick Saban, former Alabama coach, going to be talking about how to let kids make some money but not lose college sports or high school sports. Now they're talking about paying high school kids. So before we get to Congressman Chaffetz, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Former special counsel Robert Hur's report last month found no criminal charges were warranted against President Biden over his handling of classified records that date back to his time as vice president.
Well, that is Robert Hur. And that is what's going to be happening today. The special counsel who investigated President Biden's handling of documents, private documents, intelligence documents, and said he had a poor memory will appear as a private citizen when he testifies today before the House Judiciary Committee. We have his opening statement. We will read it to you.
Number two.
And it uses the data of Americans to basically read your mind and predict what videos you want to see. The reason why TikTok is so successful, the reason why it's so attractive, it's because it knows you better than you know yourself. And the more you use it, the more it learns.
Sell it or lose it. Congress will vote on the fate of TikTok. If the vote goes as planned, ByteDance will have six months to sell 80% of it. All sides are digging in. And TikTok is lashing out. To me, it's clear. Sell it or kill it.
Number one.
You know, there is a particular network where some of the overseas facilitators of the smuggling network have ISIS ties that we're very concerned about.
Threats everywhere. We look at what we're facing as a nation. As intel heads go to the Capitol, first to the Senate, today to the House. And guess what? China, Iran, Russia, AI, of course, our broken border, all front and center. With me right now on this exciting day, because at 10 o'clock, Robert Hur steps out, Jason Chaffetz. Congressman, first off, I was able to watch on C-SPAN, it's going to be on Fox Nation now, the whole Senate side of the hearings. It was kind of good to hear very little politics. Is that the way it always goes?
No.
For intel hearings, though, a lot of times?
You know what? I think they took it very seriously, and they know they're going to be more successful. I think Marco Rubio, Warner, others have done a very good job of just making sure.
Bringing down the temperature.
But not making it political. It's an election year. Everybody gets that. But that doesn't mean the nation's business should be set aside. I think they did a very good job that way.
Yeah, Christopher Wray, William Byrne, CIA director, Jerry Krause, DIA agency director, NSA director, Timothy Hoff. We had also Avril Haines, Brett Holmgren, all taking some strict questions. Iran, trying to hunt down guys like Mike Pompeo in our country.
Yeah.
Illegals, a lot of which he says we put DNA kits down there. No one's using them. We want people to be able to find out who's coming in our country. TikTok, Russia, the elections, China's land purchases were also part of it. Can we stop it? I mean, at this point, can we see a pattern with a lot of this stuff? I mean, TikTok, too, we're taking action. Iran, I don't think we're taking action. Illegals, we're not taking any action. Russia, we just seem to be watching. And they say the dangers of space are real.
There's a reason why President Trump created the Space Force. And I've seen some classified information in the past. Obviously, I can't talk about it. But that wasn't some crazy, weird idea that Donald Trump came up with. There is, in my opinion, in essence, a war going on in space as we speak. Nobody can see it. You can't send the news crews down there. You can't get a reporter there. But there's a reason why we created the Space Force, and it is pivotal.
All right. So let's talk about Robert Herr and his opening statements. And, you know, he talks about his background, his mom coming from North Korea, the South Korea, how privileged they are to be in this country. And then he gets a little bit defensive. And I think, in a way, expanding on why the fact that he brought up the president's memory. He says, my assessment is this report about the relevance of the president's memory was necessary and accurate. Most importantly, what I wrote is what I believe the evidence shows, what I expect jurors would perceive and believe. I did not sanitize my explanation, nor did I disparage the president. He says, I'm confident, as you see in chapters 11, 12, and 13 of my report, it provides an evaluation. Now, why did he include that in? Because he said this. My task was to determine whether the president retained or disclosed national intelligence information willfully, knowingly, and with the intent to do some what the law forbids. I could not make that determination without assessing the president's state of mind. For that reason, I had to consider the president's memory and overall mental acuity. These are the types of issues that prosecutors think about every day. The evidence of the president put himself and his memory squarely in issue. Quote, we interviewed the president and asked him about his recorded statement, and this is the quote. I just found all the classified stuff downstairs. He told us he didn't remember saying that, even though it's on tape. He also said he didn't remember finding any classified material in his home after his vice presidency. And he didn't remember anything about classified documents about Afghanistan, in which there was extensive. My assessment in the report about the irrelevance of the president's memory was necessary and accurate and fair, essentially saying, this is bad, but you're telling me you don't remember doing it. So how am I supposed to prosecute a guy that's going to say, I don't know, and look as though he's a doddering old man?
Well,
sympathetic.
I disagree with the conclusion that Herr came up with, but I think he's being honest in saying this is the assessment of what I came to. The problem that I have is that he took office in 1972. He was a senator for decades. Part of the documents that they find that are classified were from this time in the United States Senate. And there is no fact pattern, none, not one, in which a United States senator should be in possession of a classified document. That's not the way it works in Congress. They don't give them to you. You have to go look at them in a SCIF, a secure compartmentalized information facility, or behind closed doors. You don't get them. To say that, oh, well, he kind of forgot. I mean, I guess you have bank robbers that say they forgot armed robbery was against the law. Steve Martin used to make fun of that. He used that as his comedy line. Like, just tell him you forgot. That's really the excuse. And how I think the committee is going to dive into, particularly Republicans, on how differently Joe Biden is treated versus Donald Trump. Because you're saying if he's not qualified because his memory is so bad to stand trial for this, how do you go out and prosecute Donald Trump?
So Democrats who are concerned, they felt as though after the State of the Union address, they could try to put it in the rearview mirror of the president's age and can't do the job anymore. That's not possible. But so far, they put him out a few times. Speeches have been terrible, but he's avoided major mistakes. This, if the Democrats question this, go after Robert Herr's credibility.
Hey,
that could be trouble for them because his credibility is strong. And this report is thorough.
This is the challenge for the Democrats. They push him too hard. Herr's going to expand on his thoughts. He's going to justify the documents that he's. I think the Democrats need to sit back and say, let's just not have him say this part out loud. But if they really push it on, and by the way, there is a difference in a special counsel report as opposed to other types of activities from the Department of Justice. We spend millions of dollars as taxpayers to dive in and as a special counsel, and they have to report to Congress. That's the way the system works. And I think they need to share all of their findings along the way. They did that with the Mueller report, where the one I think that got screwed over was Hillary Clinton, because that was not a special counsel. They told the world everything she did wrong, and oh, by the way, we're not going to charge her.
I mean, that
is
Comey.
Yeah, with the Comey report. Yeah.
Here's what James Comer said yesterday. Cut 16.
We've got a lot of questions about which documents were mishandled, so that's going to be the focus of my questions, but there are a lot of other people will be questioned too. That'll be led by the Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, it was so Jim Jordan was on with me, and that's where they're going to go. But do you think Democrats, as Trey Gowdy just speculated, will try to just compare everything to Trump? And in a lot of ways, for example, you don't like where Trump kept his stuff in a locked room in Mar-a-Lago? Do you like it better in the basement of in rotting boxes and the attic of Joe Biden's house in the garage?
And the Penn Center? Remember, Donald Trump is a former president. His facility is protected by the United States Secret Service. Joe Biden is a former vice president, does not have Secret Service protection, nor did he have it when he left as the senator, nor did they have it at the Penn Center.
Yeah, so this is going to be a fascinating look.
They go down that line, they lose. Because they start comparing it to Trump, Trump has far better case than Joe Biden has in the
in
this
what
scenario.
Way?
Well, as
one is 4 months and one is 40 years.
Yeah, well, and Joe Biden knew this. A president can designate something as a classified or non-classified, and his notes and memorabilia that he takes, a president could do that, and that it's protected by the Secret Service. And look at how did her issue any subpoenas? Don't know. And as I brought up earlier with you on Fox and Friends, hey, did you go and look at all the fake names? Remember, Joe Biden, as vice president, was using a fake name. He had fake emails. He had 28,000. So 28,000 times there were emails going back and forth between Hunter Biden's business partners and the White House. Did you look at that? Was there any classified information in there?
They also want to find out if I think they might pursue this. What did you find out about Ukraine? What did you know about Ukraine on this?
Yeah.
And because they're looking into they're doing the impeachment inquiry. Do you think somehow those worlds will meet?
The problem with the committee is they're not going to get the evidence that they want. They're going to ask, was there a transcript? Was there a recorded video? Was there an audio recording? What other documents did you – if you sifted through 7 million documents or whatever the ridiculous number is, where is that? Did you find it? Because the committee is going to want to see that, and they're going to say – Department of Justice is going to say no. He's testifying as an individual, by the way, since he's left the Department of Justice, which creates a whole new dynamic.
Yeah. I mean, for one thing, this would never have been found if somebody didn't stumble into it. So people talk about Joe Biden cooperating. If you have documents that you shouldn't have over the course of 40 years and a staffer finds it and you don't block, I guess you get credit for not blocking the investigation. But when his lawyers went into his garage, they were so overwhelmed by the volume of papers with classified markings, they called the Department of Justice.
Yeah,
they didn't want to get screwed. And they're not going to hire. I'm not going to go down for Joe Biden.
As the report says, it took like 7 weeks to finally get Department of Justice to go in there and do what they were supposed to do. And then say, hey, you know, why don't you just make this at the Penn Center? Why didn't they do a raid? I mean, if it was all this classified sensitive information and the response was, well, just put a lock on it. Like, really? Some of this is TSSCI, top secret, secured compartmentalized information. SCI means that is like code word, covert stuff that's happening that we don't know the extent. Was it one? Was it multiple? These are the types of things that get people killed. If that comes out. And the other thing that Biden did that was so wrong is he goes in, he gets a classified briefing, takes notes, and then takes the notes with him. You can't do that. Even if they say it and you write it down, it's still classified, even if it's not marked classified at the top.
So in one of these documents, it says, had a meeting with General McChrystal, was asking for more troops in the Situation Room.
Right.
So he takes the papers. Writes his notes on him, like, doesn't need more proof. I don't believe this guy. Leaves with him. And then brags that he's got these papers for his ghostwriter who's putting the book together. So look at this, page 207. Biden's memory was also appeared to have significant limitations, both at the time he spoke to his ghostwriter in 2017, as evidenced by the recorded conversations, and today, as evidenced by his recorded interview with our office. Biden recorded conversation with the ghostwriter from 2017 are often painfully slow, with Biden struggling to remember events, straining at times to read and relay his own notebook entries. His interview with our office, Biden's memory was worse. He did not remember when he was vice president, forgetting the first day of his interview when his term ended. When did I stop being vice president was one of the things he said, and forgetting on the second day of the interview is when his term began. He did not remember even within several years when his son Beau died. They just released the portion of this of the transcript on this. You know what happened? He actually said during the meeting with Robert Herr, "When did my son die?" And his lawyer answered, 2015. And then for him to show outrage that night shows you he forgot that he brought it up.
Yeah. Joe Biden goes out in front of the world and says, I can't believe, you know, when they brought that up. But it's the record reflects totally differently that Biden is the one that brought it up. It's sad, but it's also the reality. And he has a duty, I think, to report that. Democrats are going to go nuts on him for reporting it, but he's just laying out the facts.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. We're going to take a time out and come back. I just want to ask you this question about classified documents. There is a debate on whether now the Republican nominee after today will be getting security briefing. What Adam Schiff said and what Jason Chaffetz says, very different. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Grey's Anatomy, the most iconic binge-worthy drama, is back. Along with answers to the biggest cliffhangers. Will Teddy survive? Will Joe and Link finally find happiness together? Meredith returns along with fan faves like Arizona. You can now stream every episode of Grey's ever on Hulu and new episodes next day. Watch the season premiere of Grey's Anatomy Thursday at 9, 8 central on ABC and stream on Hulu.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He also said that he couldn't remember when he was elected vice president, how long he served as vice president during the interview that they had over a two-day time period. So the memory concerns, I think, are evident. The American people see that all the time. But I think there's also, remember, this is over five decades. There was classified material found clear back in the early days when Joe Biden was senator from Delaware. So this is a 50-year process. And I think a fundamental point here is, too, is Joe Biden was totally familiar with how you are supposed to handle classified documents. 50 years in public service, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, 8 years as vice president when he's getting a daily intelligence brief, time that he spent in the Situation Room. So he definitely knew what he was supposed to do, failed to do that.
You know, one thing they also say in the report, he said, yeah, I really had some wars with General Eikenberry, who was in charge of Afghanistan. And Robert Herr said, no, you didn't. In fact, you in some of these memos, you're praising him. He agreed with you on Afghanistan. He goes, oh. So that was Jim Jordan responding to the opening remarks that Robert Herr will say. Jason Chaffetz here. Jason, when it's all said and done, if Democrats want this to go away, do you think they'll just parry the whole thing to Trump?
Yeah, I think the only words you hear coming out of their mouths are Trump, 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 and how this was so much worse. Now, he obviously wasn't the special counsel on the Trump case, but he is mentioned in the report. But he can only really speak firsthand about what went on with Biden.
So President Trump is going to be the official nominee today. He's going to win a couple of states. So will he get a intelligence briefing? Adam Schiff was asked this, of all people, on Meet the Press, Cut 5.
I have to hope, and knowing the intelligence community as I do, that they will dumb down the briefing for Donald Trump. That is, they will give him no more information than absolutely necessary, nothing that would reveal sources or methods, because we can't trust that he will do the right thing with that information.
Do you believe that, Adam Schiff, talking about?
This is so rich coming from Adam Schiff. This guy lied to the American people for years when he was chairman of the Intel Committee. He'd go in and he'd walk right out of that meeting and just lie to the American people. I thought they should have stripped Adam Schiff of his security clearance.
They did kick him off the Intelligence Committee, didn't they?
Yeah, but the reality is, a former president continues to get security briefings.
Already?
All of them. Obama gets it. Even Carter was getting them, for goodness sake. George Bush gets them. They do that for continuity of government so presidents can lean on other presidents. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Would you do?
Yeah.
Congressman Jason Chaffetz, thanks for your insight. Coming up next, Frank McCourt. He used to own the Dodgers, but he's on a bigger fight now, bigger mission.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
How are we getting more access to information and getting stupid?
Because it's simple. Because they took your critical thinking away earlier in these different demoralization steps. They took your ability to critically think away. They taught you how to believe. And then after you believe so much, they flooded you with information that you do not know how to dissect and digest. You cannot, and it's so much, you're overstimulated. It's information coming from everywhere. Now your attention span is too short for you to even be able to think about this stuff. They're hitting you with really short videos, and then they're changing things rapidly. Today, it's an app. 2 weeks later, it's a new app. The one that you was using 2 weeks before is old. They're doing this intentionally because now you don't stick long enough to process and understand information.
So that is part of the challenge. Ever since we came up with the internet, we thought it was going to revolutionize things, and it did. Did it make your life easier? In some respects, yes. Has it changed everything and a lot for the worse? Clearly, and I think most people agree on that. I did not know it, but this is the 35-year anniversary of the birth of the World Wide Web. Our next guest just told me that. His name is Frank McCourt. He has written the book out today, Our Biggest Fight, Reclaiming Liberty, Humanity, and Dignity in the Digital Age. Frank, welcome.
Yeah, nice to be with you, Brian.
So was that a great move, the World Wide Web?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it, the internet as envisioned and launched was a, awesome idea. A powerful, powerful technology, decentralized and intended, to be the proverbial tide that lifts all boats, right? That just provided us with the ability to share information and knowledge and just get better and smarter and wealthier and so on and so forth. And about 20 years ago, things changed because we entered a different phase of the internet, which I call the app era. And, these big platforms really started to scrape all of our information, all of our data, aggregate it, and then decide what to do with it, how to monetize it, how to deal with our personal information and make it theirs and then do stuff with it. And the stuff they were doing with it was not designed to, optimize for a healthy democracy or protect young children or find more accurate facts and truth. It was designed to sell more ads, keep people online more, the clickbait stuff, right? And all that. And so it got off the rails, so to speak. So the World Wide Web, awesome idea, connect people and really empower them. It turned into a very, very different direction when these big apps showed up and started to really steal what I would call our personhood from us.
But would you also say collected intelligence? So I could Google and get information where normally I'd go to the library. You have to grab an encyclopedia. So while it was collecting intelligence to help make life easier, it was also collecting personal data in order to be a sales tool, to give us what we needed to sell more products and not necessarily have our best welfare in mind.
Of course. And because of the way it was, as I said, the way it was redirected to be highly centralized, highly autocratic, highly surveillance-based, what started out as this awesome thing that was going to just, help us connect and communicate, help us get answers more quickly, shop and have, go online and get something delivered to our home tomorrow morning, all that's great stuff. But what we've realized is what these big platforms have done is really scrape our – Right. Scrape our data, but let's not call it data, because data is like, what's data? Who cares, right? It's our personhood. It's everything about us in the digital era. So it's really who we are, and these big platforms now own us. And we were talking a few moments ago about TikTok, which everybody's concerned about right now because it's owned by the Chinese Communist Party. Now they're getting all this information, and I do want to highlight that the technology, the way it's designed to scrape our data and really aggregate all this information about us and then optimize for something, is the same technology that our big platforms are using. Now, the difference, of course, is they're owned by American corporations, not the Chinese government. But I don't think any of us really want to be invaded and you know by these and really surveilled 24/7 and have our personhood scraped.
So let's say you're looking for shoes. And you're talking about shoes. I got to go shoe shopping. Next thing you know, shoes are popping up on your Facebook page. They're popping up on your Twitter feed. They're popping up on things. Is it, in theory, that's helping you. Okay, I got a discount on shoes that I want. It was listening to me. But it's really creepy. It's flipping people out. I feel like more people than not are alarmed by this instead of saying, wow, what an opportunity this is.
Yeah, well, thanks to, you know, people like you and what you're doing here and now a growing number of people. I think the harms are being more clearly understood. We did look at it as sort of this benign thing. Look, I want shoes. I go online. I pick my shoes. They get delivered. Isn't that great? But this is not about shoes. You know, we should have an internet where you can, Brian, you can go on. You don't have to be targeted and surveilled, right? You can go online and just say, hey, I'd like some shoes. Tell me what you've got without your information all being grabbed and used for other purposes, which you're not aware of.
Frank McCourt's here. He's got his book out today, Our Biggest Fight, Reclaiming Liberty, Humanity, and Dignity in the Digital Age. So has it helped you in your business?
The internet in general?
Yeah.
In certain ways it has. Look, I'm a fifth generation builder, right? So our business started when my great great grandfather started building roads, when Henry Ford started building cars, and so we've been building for 131 years, and that's what brought me to this project, because we have an infrastructure problem. We have an engineering issue that can be fixed, and if we fix that engineering issue, we can have the goodness of the internet with all the creepiness that you just described. Right. And so we've built internet systems, big internet systems around the world. So has it helped my business? Yeah, it's been business for us, right, to build these telecom companies and so on and so forth. But the fact of the matter is we're now at a point where how the internet has been is being used, how it's been co-opted, right, by these big platforms is creepy. It is doing a lot of harms. It is.
Let alone AI that is here.
That's the point, right? We know it's broken. So why would we make the same tech? Why would we introduce a more powerful version of the same tech before we fix the problem?
So you paint out, you go back to January 1776 and you talk about Thomas Paine. Before there was a Declaration of Independence, there was common sense. It was about 40 pages.
Yeah, a short pamphlet, under 50
and
pages.
You think you're at this moment now with the internet. Yeah, bring some common sense into it. But can you do it without dialing back advancement? Because, you know, if people were upset in the candle business that Thomas Edison had electricity, they would have been laughed at. Are we in danger of that now, of trying to rein in something that's already there?
Well, for sure, we're watching the policy debates and nothing's getting accomplished, right? I would argue we need to innovate our way forward here. And the great thing about America is it's full of innovators, it's full of creators, it's full of builders, right? And rather than be having this never-ending conversation about, you know, what regulation, what policy, what that we're going to put in place to constrain these platforms, why not just unleash the next layer of creativity,
which would be protection?
No, which would be a fix the tech at the protocol level, which right now connects machines and data to, for the first time, connect people, put you and I in charge of our data online. So rather than having our data stolen by these big platforms, aggregated and then used for purposes that we have no idea what they're doing with it, and we're learning that some of the things they're doing with it are harming kids. They're certainly letting foreign actors into our democratic process.
I mean, we're talking about putting an age limit now in certain cities and states.
And so let's do this. Let's put adopt another protocol, a simple thin layer protocol, which actually puts us in charge of our data for the first time.
Could you ever guarantee someone? Have you talked to engineers to actually think people convinced you that we could ever be in charge of our own data?
Yes. Yeah. And that's what we're building it right now. We're building it right now. This Project Liberty has created some brilliant tech people working for the project, have put forward a new protocol. It's called DSNP, the Decentralized Social Networking Protocol. And think about the D for decentralized. It's re-decentralizing the internet, the web. It started as something that was very decentralized. It's now become something very centralized. So DSNP would put individuals in charge. They'd own and control their data. And imagine, Brian, an internet where you really have to be a person to be on the internet, right? You have to be a verified person. You can't be a machine just spewing out all kinds of misinformation.
Would you do that with fingerprints?
No, you.
I mean, how could you possibly do that?
Okay. Well, first of all, DSNP allows identity and discoverability, attestation, verification, provenance. So imagine an internet where you're connected to your data. You decide what to do with your data. And the next version of this, of the internet, of the World Wide Web, is one where the apps that are built are clicking on our terms of use for our data. Okay? We're not clicking on the terms of use of a few big platforms. So now we have variety, we have optionality, we have choice, and imagine lots of different apps being built. So you're not stuck in one walled garden or the other.
Interesting. So this is in the tradition, this is the biggest threat that our intelligence operators believe, since China's our number one enemy in the world, clearly, and competitor. And they created TikTok, which has over 170 million users, bigger than any network can imagine, including the one you're on. This is what Marco Rubio says we're up against. Cut nine.
They happen to control a company that owns the world's one of the world's best artificial intelligence algorithms. It's the one that's used in this country by TikTok. And it uses the data of Americans to basically read your mind and predict what videos you want to see. The reason why TikTok is so successful, the reason why it's so attractive, is because it knows you better than you know yourself. And the more you use it, the more it learns.
See, I imagine statements like that prompted you to write the book you did.
Oh, absolutely. And what Senator Rubio is saying is that, you know, TikTok and these other platforms, they know us better than we know ourselves, right? And so we talked earlier about buying a book, and people say, wow, what's the big deal? They have – these platforms have a little bit of my data. I get my book delivered tomorrow. This is not what's going on. They know everything about us. So hundreds of thousands of data points, that's who we are in the digital age. We need to, I think, move from a place where we think of ourselves as, you know, biological beings, right? We're born with DNA and so forth. In this digital era, our personal information, our social graphs, right? Think of it as our digital DNA. It's our lived experience. And
right. All
of that is collected. And now it's not about you bought one pair of shoes. Would you like to buy another one? It is feeding people information based on their personality and makeup. It's actually getting people to react in a certain way, right? It knows our personalities. It's making judgments about our reactions and so forth. It's very, very creepy. And I would say at odds with the principles of democracy, at least as I know, right? This idea of liberty, choice, freedom, agency, autonomy. It's the opposite. We're being manipulated now by these big platforms.
A few minutes on the other end to see what we could do about it in layman's terms, because it's easy to talk over my head when you talk about tech, because I wasn't born in Silicon Valley. But as usual, you take action. This is a problem and you want to fix it. And that's why you wrote the book. You should go out and pick it up. It's called Our Biggest Fight, Reclaiming Liberty, Humanity, and Dignity in the Digital Age. More with Frank McCourt in a moment. You're listening to Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Frank McCourt's one of America's most successful businessmen. You might know him because he just reminded me. You bought the Dodgers from us, Fox, from Rupert Murdoch. We didn't buy it from you. I had that reversed. The name of his book, it's out today. That's his new focus, Our Biggest Fight. Frank McCourt wrote this book. The subtitle is Reclaiming Liberty, Humanity, Dignity in the Digital Age. You point out 35 years ago, hard to believe, we come up with the World Wide Web. That, can you bring us through the three levels of where we're at today?
Yeah, so in 1983, the internet comes into being. A simple protocol is put in place that connects devices.
IP.
TCP/IP, that's right. IP stands for Internet Protocol. Ironically, we're still an IP address on the internet today. So if people think they're on the internet, they're not on the internet. Their device is on the internet. It was something built to connect machines, right? 1989, second generation so-called World Wide Web, 35 years ago, and that connected data, our data.
Which is?
HTTP.
Gotcha.
Okay, and that's probably some letters that we're all familiar with because we all just adopted
it. We know that we see them, but we don't understand.
Hypertext transfer protocol, but it doesn't much matter. It's just a thin protocol we adopt, and suddenly now our data is linked up.
Next.
And next, we're proposing we need another simple protocol. We call it DSMP. The name doesn't matter as much as what it does, which is for the first time would put us in charge on the internet. We would be connected to the internet, not our devices. What I argue in the book, Brian, is that – and the reason I use Thomas Paine, he put a choice to people in 1775. Do you want to be subjects, continue to be subjects and owned by a king, or do you want to be a citizen and have liberty and freedom and independence and agency and autonomy and get to own things, right?
We're being
returned to subjecthood and stripped of our citizenship by these big platforms because they own us. I want to own me, and that's what this book is about.
And what did you create?
We let's be careful because I have some brilliant technologists, and a guy by the name of Braxton Woodham and Harry Evans have led the charge to create a protocol called DSNP, open source protocol. It's been gifted to the world. Anybody can build on it. People are building on it right now. There are 700,000 people that have migrated to the third generation.
And how do we get it? Just go to the App Store?
Go to the
really? App. Okay.
At the moment, you go to MeWe, M-E-W-E. It's a Web 2 app that has 20 million users that's migrating their users over to DSMP. And 700,000 of them have made the way.
Do this, I will own my
– Own and control your data. And that's just one app. Eventually, there will be millions of – how many apps do you think there are in the world right now?
No idea.
9 million.
Okay.
Okay. 7 million controlled by basically two app stores, Google's and Apple's. There's going to be 9 million new apps in this new world. But in the new world, the apps are interoperable, and we get to tell these apps what we're willing to share with them about our data and on what terms. And if they're making money, we want to share some of that.
And again, one more time, if I want to get my data back and download, where would I go?
Start by going to MeWe.
Okay.
Okay, M-E-W-E. And then that app
will lead you through.
Will lead you through.
Wow, fantastic. So is this your latest project? Is this the most something you have the most motivated for right now?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I brought someone in to be the CEO of our company so that I could buy time back to be able to do this. I think this is vitally important, Brian. Not only for our five generational business to continue for another five generations, but for this great country to thrive and survive. Because we're all seeing, right, and feeling the harms
that are
being done.
Everybody feels nothing political that you brought up. It's all fact. We all can relate to the fight you're having. Our biggest fight, the name of the book, pick it up. Frank McCourt, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, well, welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. It's going to be a big hour. We come to you from Midtown Manhattan, but heard around the country, around the world. This hour, we're going to be joined by, we have a lot of exciting guests. First and foremost, the one we have right here is Admiral James Stavridis. The exciting day, Admiral, every time you come out with a brand new book. On top of that, Robert Hur thought this would be a perfect time to start his testimony on the Hur Report, 400 plus pages. He's front and center on Capitol Hill. A lot of excitement, a lot of fireworks. Also today, the NIL, they're going to have a roundtable. They're trying to get a hold of college sports, led by Ted Cruz. They're bringing in Nick Saban, and it's going to be a big day. Also on the House side, the Intel heads are going to be meeting about all the challenges, and supposedly nonpartisan, all the challenges facing our country, first and foremost, China, then you talk about Iran, you talk about Russia, and you talk about our southern border. Perfect time for you to come.
Well, I'm joined by my wonderful co-author, Elliot Ackerman, who was a combat Marine, Silver Star recipient in Iraq and Afghanistan, CIA officer, White House fellow. He's the brains of 2054. the novel we've just produced, which is about artificial intelligence, Brian.
Right. So it's the subtitle. It's a New York Times bestseller. The last one, You Looked Into Our Future, people looking to you for advice on taking on China. This looks so far ahead, I can't even imagine what we're going to be up to at the time. How did you guys get together?
Go ahead, Elliot.
We are both graduates of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy, where Jim was the dean. And that was sort of how we first connected. And he invited me to be the writer in residence there. And one of my duties was to talk with the admiral about books whenever he feels like it. So,
right.
So we had a relationship there. And then just by coincidence, we actually had the same editor, Scott Moyers at Penguin Press, who kind of played matchmaker for us.
Right. So what was your approach to doing this? Like, how do you possibly look ahead? I can't imagine what 2 years is going to be like, let alone 2054.
Yeah, and that's true for all of us. But the way the concept evolved between the two of us, we kind of looked at the century and said, what are the three big challenges this century? Number one, U.S.-China. Number two, artificial intelligence, conflict here in America. And number three, climate. So they spread out over the course of the century. And that's why it's a trilogy. This one, 2054, is the centerpiece of the trilogy.
All right, Elliot. So where do you pick up? Where do you start?
Well, when 2054 opens, the Republican and Democratic parties have both become minority parties. There's a new party led by a very charismatic independent president who doesn't want to let go of power. And we're seeing the rise of artificial intelligence is completely changing the topography of American politics, and enter into that a crisis. The president of the United States drops dead and people aren't sure who or perhaps what did it.
OK, there you go. That's a premise. I mean, that is did you have anybody in mind?
Yeah, I was when we were writing it, I was thinking back to Millard Fillmore.
That's absolutely it. So when you look at what's happening right now with AI, how do you catapult ahead, Admiral?
Yeah, I start by looking at what's happening in Ukraine, Brian. And here we see these Ukrainians becoming the MacGyvers of the battlefield, using not only unmanned vehicles and surface drones and much new technology, but they're starting to link it together with artificial intelligence. So you could really see the battlefield changing in front of us. And back to 2034, the U.S.-China war, we're in a foot race with China on artificial intelligence. It's one that we absolutely have to win. And what's happening on the battlefield of Ukraine tells us how important it's going to be for us.
Do you think we are?
I think we are slightly ahead of China, Brian, but I think without the right kind of support and resources, we could potentially fall behind to catastrophic effect.
Elliot, do you see a co-op with government and innovation with Silicon Valley? Or do you see a free market bringing us the innovation necessary?
I think there has to be some type of public-private partnership. I mean, if we look at the United States at our best and we face peer-level competitors, the way we've become victorious is, you know, it's not just with private sector going off alone, but with the public sector being able to catapult the private sector into dominance. I mean, that's what we saw in the Second World War. It's what we saw in the Cold War. And as we look at a peer level threat like China, it's what we need to do again. And that's not the government holding back the private sector, but really amplifying the good things that already happened.
You know, for the longest time, by the way, Robert Herr, still opening remarks by Jim Jordan, and both sides are going to be lined up when the Robert Herr report to dispute that the president's old, and one to say, why wasn't he charged? And then we'll see, comparing, everybody will compare what Robert Hurst says and what he found in the 400 pages to what Donald Trump has and what he's up against and being charged probably in a court case this summer. We'll be following that. But for the longest time, we looked at war and we said, if you want to find out what to avoid, we're supposed to learn from the previous war. Mm-hmm. So like we see Russia trying to take over Eastern Europe and people have short-term memory loss and they're saying, don't you understand? Remember what happened in World War II? Only it was Germany, but the Soviets were always looking to expand. Hence, we got the Cold War. In this, do you throw out what we've learned? Do you have to say we're in such a brand new era, the old sides don't work?
No. And I think back to Ukraine, it's this curious mix of World War I, trenches, mud, blood, artillery, tanks, World War I, all quiet
minefields
on the Western Front, minefields, pillboxes. But you've also got Starship Troopers. You've got drones and satellite and Starlink and bringing it all together with the very beginnings of artificial intelligence. So the short answer is you got to do both. You have to respect the conflicts you have fought, as we do. We're both veterans of the forever wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But you have to project yourself forward and recognize the technologies that are going to change the face of battle.
But why 2054?
I think 2054 allows us to take current trends, particularly in AI, and then project those out. And not only how they exist in conflict and in a war, but then also how they're impacting our society and our social consciousness. And so much of the action in 2054 also deals around civil conflict in the United States.
Yeah, and I'll just add that it's also the furthest out where pretty much everyone can picture themselves as still here. That's 2054. I'm in my 60s, but I'm planning on being here in 2054. Yeah. I don't think if you go much beyond that, then you're really in a more of an unknown terrain for most people.
So I want you to hear Avril Haines yesterday, D&I, talking about the threats that we face. Cut four.
Another critical intersection we are monitoring is the relationship, as the vice chairman noted, between government of Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran, which is evolving as these four countries expand collaboration through a web of bilateral and, in some cases, trilateral arrangements. This growing cooperation and willingness to exchange aid in military, economic, political, and intelligence matters enhances their individual capabilities, enables them to cooperate on competitive actions, assists them to further undermine the rules-based order, and gives them each some insulation from external international pressure.
We don't have to wonder who's on whose side. I mean, we watched in real time Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran coming together.
Absolutely. You know, we talk about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. These nations are the four horsemen of malevolence. And by the way, I'll throw a fifth one in there that folks don't think about enough, and that's Venezuela, right here in this hemisphere. Venezuela threatening its neighbors, creating unrest, working with Cuba, another malactor. But the director is right. Those are the right four to focus on. And back to 2054 and artificial intelligence, if particularly China gets ahead and then distributes that technology, we will be in grave danger.
Elliot, but the one thing about China, stop me if I'm wrong here, is they're great at theft, not great at innovation. And the thing that was allowing them to grow was the market economy to a degree that President Xi has just gotten rid of. Every time a company like Alibaba was successful, he's like, okay, enough, we'll take it from here. Now you have a whole generation that doesn't want any part of the innovation. They got some problems.
I agree. I mean, you know, we write about China and we talk about these four horsemen of the apocalypse, but, you know, they aren't 10 feet tall. They're not 10 feet tall so long as we clearly imagine the challenges and rise up to confront them. And we as a country have, you know, done this throughout our history. So I don't think we're in any way pessimistic about the future of the United States, but we need to start doing the work now to organize ourselves to make sure we're in a position to compete.
Right.
Yeah, let me add just one thought, which is we mentioned North Korea. Think about the Korean Peninsula at the end of the Korean War in the mid-1950s. The whole peninsula is absolutely destroyed. If you took a satellite picture at night, it's dark. Flash forward to today, to the south of the 38th parallel, capitalism, to the north, communism. How's that photograph look? The bottom, South Korea, ninth largest economy in the world, a sea of light. To the north, the hermit kingdom, a single point of light in its capital flickering at night. We'll win this race ultimately, Brian, because of capitalism.
Right. And we have to people. Does it concern you the rate on which the government is growing?
Absolutely. I think it ought to concern all of us. And you get into sector Our by government. Sector. Absolutely. I understand the question. And I concur with you that we need to find boundaries, limits on the expansion of government in any number of different dimensions.
Right. It doesn't have to be a conservative. Maybe conservatives want more free government and less, but we have to agree that we don't want all. I looked at the budget just released, and the thing that really grows is government. And you know what? Defense, I think in the last budget, defense grows 3.7 or 4. That's not going to do it.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, we have to agree as a country, we're going to have to put more into defense. And I think people like you have to go into the Pentagon with others and say, how do we save money? Because I think you know better than, especially for the guy you work for, Donald Rumsfeld.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of waste, a lot of redundancy.
I completely agree. And at the end of the day, this is where outside voices of those of us who are veterans like myself and Elliot can be very powerful because we're unshackled from wearing the uniform. We're now free to really speak our mind.
Do you find that there's a lot of people in colleges across the country, like Tufts, that are focused on national security like this, that feel patriotic enough to think, for lack of a better term, America first? How does America prevail? Because I don't see a lot of that rhetoric coming out. When I was growing up, I always felt like we had to tamp down our swagger, that if people got angry at us because America thinks we walk on water. Now I think it's the opposite. Do you find that in institutions?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. And that I think, as a country, we need to sort of go back to first principles, that this place is, that the United States is a good place and worth the fighting for. And that doesn't mean we have a perfect history. That doesn't mean we're always impeccable. We always get to the right answer. But we always have gotten to the right answer eventually. And we need to continue to ground our young people in those ideas. And so that we have young people in a new generation that's also committed to service. So, yes, there are people on college campuses that want to serve. But I think we've gotten away from that in recent years, and we need to get back to that if we're going to be ready to meet the threats that are on our horizon.
All right. Let's see for a few more minutes. Admiral Stavridis is here along with Elliot Ackerman. Together, they've written the book released today, 2054, A Novel of the Next World War. We're also watching the events with Robert Herr. We'll bring back the beginning of the opening statements where we have Congressman Nadler and Congressman Jordan both spoke, and Robert Herr looks quite uncomfortable. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Which brings me to the second distinction this report helps us draw between President Biden and Donald Trump. Simply put, President Biden had the mental acuity to navigate this situation. Donald Trump did not. Much has been made of the special counsel's gratuitous comments about the President Biden's age. But let's set the context. After returning every classified document, after opening his home to federal investigators, while simultaneously managing the first hours of the crisis in Israel, President Biden volunteered to sit through a five-hour interview with the special counsel. I believe, as is his habit, that President Biden probably committed a verbal slip or two during the interview. And I'm not sure any of that matters, because when the interview was over...
There was more than a verbal slip or two. There was 400 pages of it. When you see it, it happened over the course of 1970s. I mean, you literally have documents there from his visit with Tito when the Soviet Union, was intact, and he bragged about it in the text. The 400-plus pages, and you're going to hear the transcript is now out, and the stuff about his son being brought up by investigators was not his son being brought up. He brought it up about the age. So you have the conclusions there. All this stuff is done around Robert Herr. Not one question has been posed to him yet. With me in studio is Elliot Ackerman and Admiral James Stavridis. They've come out with a brand-new book out today called 2054 and talking about some of the challenges facing us. But I think the bigger story is happening later today, when the House Intelligence Committee sits in front of the heads of the intel to talk about the dangers facing our country. If you were asking a question of our intel agencies, and I know some of them are your friends, where would you be the most pointed? Where would you want to get the most answers? Where would you be the most focused, Admiral?
I'll give you three things very quickly. Number one is, what are we doing in space? We have a glittering array, a constellation of satellites. But the Russians are talking about anti-satellite weapons that could knock us out, that could blind the elephant in battle, so to speak. Number two, how are you protecting the nation in cyber and cybersecurity? And number three, the subject of the new book, 2054, artificial intelligence. Are we putting enough resources in place? And my view, in all three of those areas, we're deficient.
Right. And the one thing with space, we do have a space force, and people were kind of laughing at that, Elliot, right? Now, when this came out last year, when Congressman Turner a couple of weeks ago came out and said, the Russians are creating a some type of rocket to blow up our satellites, I thought to myself, I thought if anyone was going to innovate in space, it was going to be us.
Well, I think that's right. And, you know, we talked a little about Ukraine before and how that's a hybrid war where you see, you know, on the one hand, you're fighting this 20th century war in trenches and with tanks and artillery. And on the other hand, you're fighting a war that's very reliant on innovations in drones and AI. And the side there that has the advantage is really the one that can toggle between high tech and no tech very, very quickly. And so when you take out one of our satellites, what that does to our military forces is it blinds them. They can no longer use GPS. They can no longer use many of their radio systems. And so how are they going to operate? And the military that's going to be the most proficient in this new type of warfare is the one that can immediately go from extremely high-tech systems all the way back to navigating off of a compass.
But would you say also, I never taught at a war college, although I could have been texted. I might be getting that offer sometime in this segment. But the best way to make sure they don't hit ours is to show them how that we can hit theirs.
Absolutely. This is deterrence. And deterrence has two components. One is capacity, making sure your opponents know what you can do. And the second thing is credibility. Do they understand that you're willing to employ those forces? If you can create that, as we have with nuclear weapons, for example, you can deter your opponents. We're not there yet.
What should be, and finally, as we look at 2054, what should we be most worried about? Elliot, you real quick.
We talked about national security threats. I think the greatest national security threat facing our country is our own domestic dysfunction. So we got to get that in check.
Admiral?
Cyber and cybersecurity, which ties to what Elliot just said. If we are manipulated by outside sources, we're in danger. We got to solve these problems ourselves.
Pick up these books. Be the smartest one at your tailgate party this weekend and at your think tank next week. 2054. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
In August 2022, President Biden questioned in a 60 Minutes interview how anyone can be that irresponsible when asked about classified documents in the possession of former President Trump. But when President Biden said this, he knew that he had stashed classified materials in several unsecured locations for years, dating back to his time as vice president and even as a U.S. senator. President Biden, the White House, and his personal attorneys have not been honest with the American people about his willful retention of classified material and continue to hide information from Congress.
That is James Comer with his opening statements. And that is Jim Jordan has already spoken. And I'm talking about the Robert Hur report. I mean, there's so much going on today. There's going to be a high level intel meeting with the intel committee on the House side. Yesterday was with the Senate committee. But all the intelligence heads are meeting. Questions are bandied back and forth. Intelligence is given out. It's televised for us to see, and it is extremely important. But right now, Robert Hur is out after doing a 400-page multi-month report on Joe Biden, senator, the vice president, now president, his use of intelligence material and how irresponsible he was, where he left it and what he did with it, and how he was unable to remember most of it. And Robert Hur is now defending his report, and it should get ugly in the most political way possible. I sense a lot of people are going to give him speeches, not give him a chance to talk. Joining us now is Kurt Mills, executive director of the American Conservative. Hey, Kurt, how important is this hearing today right now for this election?
Yeah, Brian, I think we could look back on this as actually the seminal moment of the campaign. If Hur delivers in oral form what he had written, it will reverse the sort of narrative we have on this election. Rewind a year before the Democratic prosecutors or Democratic aligned prosecutors began prosecuting former President Trump, only to see Trump's popularity skyrocket. Mr. Hur basically declined to prosecute Biden, if we believe what he wrote, because he believes the current president to be too feeble. It will send a message that the Republicans are essentially not willing to play politics with the judiciary, and it might actually have a more profound result, right, in the electorate itself.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Jerry Nadler introduced a video of President Trump misspeaking. Let's say calling Obama instead of Biden, saying Nikki Haley instead of Nancy Pelosi, and played all that. That was the pushback on the Robert Hur Report, 400-plus pages, as if the investigation into Trump and the scrutiny on Trump isn't enough. But what they're trying to do is take a guy that's apolitical. He was recommended by Maryland officials to have that job by Donald Trump. But he has no history of being a conservative and a Republican. But that's why he was picked. They just didn't like the results. And this is the Democrats got to watch it. Because if they go out of their way to prove that Joe Biden is so competent, then the question will be, why wasn't he charged?
No, it is absolutely a dangerous game. I mean, there has been some comparisons here to the behavior of former FBI Director Comey in the 2016 election, but this strikes me as far more dangerous for the Democrats and far earlier. It's an academic debate whether or not Comey's letter in the closing days of the election in 2016 actually had a material effect. This is a full 8 months out. And it's the kind of thing where you ask people on the street, what could change someone's vote from Biden to Trump, or from Biden to stay home, or from Biden to a third party? This, more than any event that I can forecast, has the potential to do that.
So the biggest story now is the border. And now Democrats are jumping onto it because they realize it. And because they didn't even debate the bipartisan bill, they're saying, look, the Republicans don't want a solution to it. They don't want to even bring it up because there was an answer to it, and they just don't want to give Joe Biden the win. That's the narrative they're pushing on. But then Laken Riley gets killed by an illegal immigrant, and they do not know how to act. It was not in the speech. Marjorie Taylor Greene brings it up. He responds, gets her name wrong, and then after it said, called him an illegal. And this becomes the big debate. Is the murderer, is it right to call him an illegal? Here's what Joe Biden said Saturday, cut 17.
During your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Laken Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
Okay, so we said we regret using the word. I couldn't believe it. Why would you even bring up using, or newcomer is the new word, illegal alien, illegal, migrant, whatever. Why would words matter? But then I was stunned by this, Kurt, cut 18.
The president absolutely did not apologize. There was no apology anywhere in that conversation. He did not apologize. He used a different word. I think what we should be really clear about is the facts.
What is she talking about? Regrets, apology? What is the point?
Sorry, it's a total madhouse. I mean, I think this is the reality of an administration trapped by its own propaganda. On the one hand, they essentially won the White House in 2020 by going left, and so they're totally afraid of going to the center because they'll sort of repel and revolt their own base. On the other hand, you have his sort of quisling apparatchiks out there in the public square who can't even admit that the man in the ninth decade might have misspoke, because that will show weakness on the other end. It's a complete pincer motion, and I really just it's increasingly difficult to see how he improves from it. They're essentially gambling that they have enough, and they'll flip a coin and see if this works.
But I don't even understand the benefit of it, of them saying, we didn't re-apologize. What do you mean you didn't apologize? You did. If you want to appease the people on your left, like Nancy Pelosi and the squad, and almost every Democrat came out complaining that he used the word illegal instead of murderer. But they say instead of migrant or newcomer. And then they say, well, he didn't apologize. Well, who's he trying to please with that? And then when asked about taking unilateral action, executive action on the border, which Donald Trump did, obviously, opened himself up to legal challenges, but ultimately prevailing on most of them, including remain in Mexico. This is what he said. Cut 21.
Mr. President, when is a border executive action coming? An executive action on the border.
Counting on the border action happened by itself. They're passing it.
The Congress can't come to an agreement.
Well, they haven't yet. They haven't yet. I'm helping them.
So you believe that? So he will walk away from executive action.
because he put himself in an impossible position. Said it wasn't his fault. It's nothing he did. It was his fault. It's what he did. And then he said, I'm going to take executive action. Then I guess someone realized if you take executive action, you'll look like you were lying for the last 3.5 years. So he decides, I'm not doing anything.
Yeah, I know. The old Chinese aphorism, I believe, is confusion is the enemy, and we're certainly confused. If there's a tactic in here, it is that. I mean, again, we are still coming down from this, I think, fairly tendentious line from the administration, which is effectively, this is a problem that they created. If they had just really essentially accepted the benefits of the status quo ante, if they had accepted the Trump positions, they might not be in this bind, but instead they're attempting to blame everybody else for decisions they made. On the other hand, they can't even own that the president of the United States occasionally makes mistakes, because any acceptance of mistakes indicates that the president is possibly senile. It is a word you're not supposed to use in journalism, but it is an unprecedented situation.
So real quick, so the president's now playing into, I'm old, I'm not the youngest guy, I'm not old. Do you think that is going to be effective? I personally think it all falls apart the more he campaigns. He can't do it. Yesterday, he asked permission to ask questions, if he could accept questions, and they said no.
I know. I mean, I think it makes sense if they really do buy this line. I mean, the president's favorite historian is this person called John Meacham, and he's arguing that this election is the 1860 election, and you just don't have to read very hard for the subtext here. The Republicans are the South and the Confederates, and Biden then is this sort of grand old man of state who's going to keep things very normal. I think the entire problem, which confounds the narrative, is that even your moderate, even Democratic-leaning voters concedes that things in this country are not normal right now. Within memory, within 5 years ago, this country was a profoundly culturally different and more moderate place. And so for Biden to kind of go up there and sort of say that he's a mixture of Reagan in 1984, a kindly old man, mixed with Clinton, a centrist Democrat on top of his own party, I think neither pass muster.
John Meacham has lost his mind. He has no perspective. He has proximity to power, and he loves it. Abraham Lincoln was in his 50s, came out of nowhere. Donald Trump and Joe Biden are totally different, and we're not about to go to a civil war. Bill Clinton would not recognize the Democratic Party right now. Whatever you want to say about that and his personal behavior, he does not believe in anything that they're doing right now, unless he had a brain operation, too. Thanks so much. Kurt's going to be an interesting 9 months. Kurt Mills, Executive Director of the American Conservative. When we come back, more highlights from Robert Herr.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. In a matter of moments, we're going to go on FBN. Always love doing that, doing a simulcast. I'm still watching the Robert Herr Report. We'll pull back some more sound, at which time Jerry Nadler, all he did was contrast Trump and Biden, Trump and Biden. He wanted to bring out that, well, Donald Trump did this. Joe Biden, by mistake, took this stuff home, had no idea. He goes, did he lie? He said, well, yeah, there were certain things that are not credible. They said, but you say he didn't lie. You move on. So, again, Robert Herr wanted to answer. Then they get into a bunch of hypotheticals. What about this? What about that? He's like, I'm not investigating Donald Trump, but they're just using Robert Herr's presence to try Donald Trump, which Jack Smith is doing a great job leaking out information on. So right now, let's listen in with
on the East Coast.
Ashley.
That means Brian Kilmeade joins us now. He's on television. He's on radio. Today's doing both at the same time. Brian, remember last week when New York Attorney General Letitia James was booed at that FDNY event? Roll tape.
Oh, come on. We're in a house of God. First, simmer down. I want to thank Commissioner Kavanaugh and Chief Hodgins for that recognition.
Yeah, you can hear them chanting Trump, Trump, Trump in the background. Now the FDNY is scolding those firefighters who booed. They say, look, when you're not on duty, feel however you want about politicians. Vote, protest, that's your right. But don't do it on the job's time. All right, Brian, what's your thought on that?
Number one, just going into the background of this, I'm not a firefighter, but man, do I have respect for what they do. I know this, that evidently on these promotional ceremonies, it is considered usually raucous in a carnival-like atmosphere. That's how it's been described in the past. Now, if they were chanting Biden, 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 I imagine it might have been a different reaction. Number two is she comes out there because I guess she was invited by a friend to do it. If she didn't go out on the camera every single day, national and local, and just taunt Donald Trump in this case that is trumped up, pun intended, to bankrupt him multiple times and then taunt him on Twitter, you better expect this type of repercussions if you go to an area which really doesn't support those antics. And sadly, Ashley Webster, if you went to a public event to host, we'll watch President Biden go to give a speech, Adam Schiff go to give a speech, interrupted by pro-Hamas protesters. I watched a bunch of celebrities try to walk down to the Kodak Theater. They got stopped by a bunch of protesters. That's what happens when you're a public figure. And now if you're going to go front and center and mock a former president and then not expect if you go in front of a crowd in an unscripted situation for them not to act out, I think you're in the wrong business. There's plenty of jobs for her high paying at a private law firm.
Yep. If you dish it out, you have to be able to take
it.
But next one for you, Brian. Donald Trump's lawyers just filed a motion to delay his New York hush money trial until after the Supreme Court rules on presidential immunity. The trial set to begin on March 25th. Do you think it's going to be delayed?
Because it's New York? No. He also is going to make a maneuver to make Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels and have their testimony tossed out because they've been thought to have lied in the past. We'll see if these petitions happen. I think this will most likely get started in a couple of weeks. And, you know, it's always a risk with the New York jury. I get it. But if you look at this case, from what we know, you thought a 9-0 Supreme Court decision was momentum for the former president. If he could go and stare down Alvin Bragg and get his if his attorneys are up for this challenge, he has every he's got a lot going on his side, including the statute of limitations. This is a case he could win.
Yeah.
And this is a time in which you want it before you need to be on the campaign trail every single day.
Right. All right. I want to get this one in, too, Brian, before we have to say goodbye. Deadspin just being sold to a European startup and the entire staff was laid off. It comes just months after they were forced to apologize for wrongly accusing a young Kansas City Chiefs fan of wearing blackface. You know, this is, it's been a rough time for Deadspin, but my goodness, they put themselves in the hot seat.
Yeah, I mean, Deadspin is an edgy organization for years, was extremely funny, seems to have lost that edge. But my question to you, Ashley, you're more the business guy, is if you buy Deadspin, don't you want the people with the attitude and the writers? What are you actually buying, the masthead? Are you buying the office space?
Yeah.
If you fired everybody, does Deadspin, I guess you get the followers and the subscribers? I don't know many people that go, what is Deadspin on today? Before I start my day and get dressed, let me go to that first. So this European company thinks it's best to fire everybody there. I feel bad for a lot of probably some great people that are there that have to wonder where the next paycheck's coming. And what did they say prior to the sale?
Exactly.
Did they promise to keep them in their jobs? That's another key to this story.
Very much. Brian, terrific stuff as always. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Go get him, Ashley. Thank you.
Still ahead.
All right, 1-866-408-7669. I don't know what we're able to pull back, but right now this seems to be a carnival of POVs. Robert Herr is just in between. If he was nervous, he does not look nervous now. Why? Because in his report, if Democrats want to call him out, this report makes Joe Biden look absolutely awful. And the more they go back and look at his behavior, the more egregious it's going to be, the more you underline it. And I'm telling you, the question that Jason Chaffetz had, who is a former member of Oversight, Chairman of Oversight Committee, is so true. Hey, Robert Herr, as thorough as this is and the 7 million documents that you went through, did you go and find Joe Biden's pseudonym that he used as vice president, perhaps senator, during those years when the internet was just ramping up? And did you go find out about his communication to other organizations and what other intelligence that might be involved? Because if you want a thorough investigation, that is it. The other thing I got to ask you is somewhat philosophical. people point out that Donald Trump took the documents. No one stopped him. Put him on his chopper, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, bunch of interns. Put him into Mar-a-Lago, had him out there. They asked for him back. They said, come out. They were talking to him a bunch of times. What happened in between is going to be investigated and litigated. But if you did not have the Penn Center, somebody stumbling on documents at the Penn Center, if we're to believe this is how it happened, and see intelligence markings there, and then have somebody go into his garage and his attic, and so overwhelmed by the number of classified documents, they had to call the Department of Justice. Would anyone have gotten that back? And is that any different from what Donald Trump did?
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. I'm so glad you're here. Coming up shortly, Mark Robinson, Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, who has now got the Republican nomination and wants to be the next governor of North Carolina. Charismatic politician who wants to take on all his critics, and he'll do it right here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. He is now in a dead heat with Josh Stein on the Democratic side. He'll be replacing a Democratic governor in that state. We are following all the breaking events today, including a roundtable on college sports, NCAA college sports. When you talk about the NIL, led by Ted Cruz, featuring Nick Saban. We're also looking at the Intel Committee on the House side. All the heads are meeting with the Intel Committee on the House side after meeting with the Senate side yesterday. It's going to be fascinating. We'll bring some of that back. But for now, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
You know, there is a particular network that has where some of the overseas facilitators of the smuggling network have ISIS ties that we're very concerned about.
That is Chris Wray. And just some of the things that he is concerned about. There are so many. There's too many to list. Threats everywhere. We look at what we're facing as a nation. His intel heads go on Capitol Hill for a second straight day. China, Iran, AI, and most of all, the broken border, all are a threat. We'll explain.
Number two.
And it uses the data of Americans to basically read your mind and predict what videos you want to see. The reason why TikTok is so successful, the reason why it's so attractive, is because it knows you better than you know yourself. And the more you use it, the more it learns.
I agree. Sell it or lose it, Marco Rubio says. Congress will vote on the fate of TikTok. If the vote goes as planned, ByteDance will have to have 6 months to sell 80% of its ownership. It's really run by China. All sides are digging in, and TikTok is lashing out. To me, it's clear. Sell it or kill it.
Number one.
The evidence and the president himself put his memory squarely at issue. He also said he didn't remember finding any classified material in his home after his vice presidency. And he didn't remember anything about how classified documents about Afghanistan made their way into his garage.
Robert Hur, just moments ago, the special counsel is investigating President Biden's handling of documents and said he had a poor memory, will appear as a private citizen and is doing that right now, testifying as we speak in front of the House Judiciary Committee. And it has been fiery. And I'm going to go over it. But first, let me bring in Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson of North Carolina, the Republican gubernatorial candidate. Lieutenant Governor, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure.
And Governor and Lieutenant Governor, congratulations about getting the nomination. What to become governor? What would that mean to you?
Well, Brian, I think it would mean a lot to a lot of people here in North Carolina. But to me personally, to be able to become governor and continue to the 13 years of progress that our General Assembly has done and taken us from the economic doldrums that we're in under the Democrats to the success that we see now, it would mean everything. It would also be historic, being the first black governor of North Carolina. That would be something personally for me that I think would be quite satisfying as being a student of history.
Well, Donald Trump is firmly in your camp. Here's what he said about you.
This is Martin Luther King on steroids. Okay, now I told that to Mark. I said, I think you're better than Martin Luther King. I think you are Martin Luther King times two. And he looked at me, and I wasn't sure, was he angry because that's a terrible thing to say, or was he complimented? I have never figured it out, but I'm telling you, he's one of, right? When I said that to you, you looked like, I don't know if I like that comment. You should like it. because you are outstanding, and you're going to be the next governor.
So obviously North Carolina is going to be a tough fight for Republicans and Democrats, and the Republicans have won it. Obama was the last one, and one I think won it, running for president. What are those? The compliment meant a lot to you. I mean, with Donald Trump's support, you could do a lot of things in the Republican Party.
Absolutely. I took that compliment very well, and but those are some mighty big shoes to fill. But the president, he's done great things. He did great things as president, and we think that he'll do great things again. And we know that the road to the White House is going to run right through North Carolina. So partnership with a man who's had proven success in the White House is going to be key for us. And that's the key term here, proven success. There's been proven success on my side of the aisle here in North Carolina, and there's been proven success with the Trump administration when he was president. So proven success is the key here.
True. So, Lieutenant Governor, a lot of things you say people are pointing out that are controversial. Here's one of them.
This narrative about Republicans being racist and cannot stand Mexican people and black people and women is ridiculous. Idiotic guy was on stage with Candace Owens a few days ago and asked her, what America are we going back to make America great again? The one where women couldn't vote or black people were swinging from trees? I would say to him if I was standing in front of him, I absolutely want to go back to the America where women couldn't vote. Do you know why? Because in those days, we had people who fought for real social change, and they were called Republicans. And they are the reason why women can vote today. Those days that he talked about when black folks were swinging from trees, guess who it was out there fighting to bring that to an end, to bring Jim Crow to an end? It was Republicans.
So they took the headline, I absolutely want to go back to a day in America where women couldn't vote. Is that what you meant?
Oh, absolutely not. That's just pure foolishness, and these people know it. Look, Brian, the bottom line is this. These folks are going to do everything they can. They're going to throw every smoke screen they can, every old Facebook post they can bring up. Americans, North Carolinians, they don't want to hear about that. What they want to hear about are the substantive issues that we're facing. A mom who's worried about her children coming home safe from school. A wife who's worried about her husband coming home who is a police officer, or a husband who's worried about his wife coming home that's a police officer, coming home safe. Folks who are worried about pornography being presented to their children in public education. Folks who are have their children stuck in failing public schools. They don't want to hear about this stuff. They want to hear about, number one, the issues that we're facing, and most importantly, they want to hear about the solutions to those issues.
But you were just pointing out that it was Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln and people like that, Republicans, who were pushing back against segregationist Democrats at the time in the
South. Absolutely.
And you weren't saying you weren't going for women to vote, but you were asked a choice. And you said, well, it was the first thing we did is blacks got the right to vote. And then Frederick Douglass put all his attention with Susan B. Anthony to make sure women were right behind him. Correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the exact point. You know, you can't discuss history with a leftist, because whatever you say, they're going to take your words and they're going to twist them. But in this race, again, we're going to continue to focus on those substantive issues. We know that these folks take our words out of context. We know that everything that we say is going to be highly scrutinized. But here's what they can't scrutinize. They can't scrutinize the fact that on policies that affect people and places, states and cities and our nation, the left-hand side of the aisle fails, the right-hand side of the aisle wins every time. And that's what we're going to focus on.
So just to go through some of the things that are going to be hitting you for the next 6 months, how do you feel about feminism?
About feminist?
Yes.
I think that feminists have done great work in this country as far as pushing equal rights for women. One of the things that we were slowest with in this country was giving women equal rights both in the workplace and politics, all across the spectrum. We have seen that change dramatically in my lifetime. Unfortunately, we're starting to see some of it be pushed back now because of some of the foolish moves by leftists who are currently trying to destroy the great system of women's sports in this country that we built. They're now trying to tear that down. So I think that women have done great work in this country.
But you're not against. But you don't want you want biological women playing with biological women, and that's different.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I want the same thing that those women who fought so hard for Title IX and for equality in sports. I want the same thing that they want. I want them to have an equal level playing field. And right now that's being destroyed. So those folks that say that I'm against women, I would say the folks that are against women are the ones that want men to enter their sports and put them out of their scholarships and have them on the bench in favor of biological men.
Do you have anything against Muslims? Do you believe the Holocaust happened?
Absolutely, the Holocaust happened. Look, I can remember the days of 7th, 8th, 9th grade when we first studied the Holocaust when we were in junior high. I can remember the pictures vividly of the folks, of the survivors of Auschwitz and Buchenwald and Bergen-Belsen. I remember hearing and reading about the stories of the trucks full of Zyklon B gas, and I remember seeing the callous way that these inhumane Nazis stacked up human beings like corkwood. And it shook me to my core to know that there were human beings who existed on this planet that would do that. To say that that didn't exist is an absolute falsehood, something I've never believed, because here it is, Brian. I've come to know this since then, after studying history extensively. Anti-Semitism has existed on this planet for hundreds of years before Adolf Hitler. And the difference between the Holocaust and before is this: the Holocaust of World War II, it caught it on camera. It caught it on camera, and it cemented it in our mind. And that's the reason why we're so determined to make sure that it never happens again, because we now know how dangerous it is. So, of course, the Holocaust happened, and anyone who denies it, I think, is an absolute fool.
And there are people are saying that you did and you don't. And your view on Muslims?
There's absolutely nothing wrong with the Muslim religion. Of course, the United States of America is a constitutional republic, and the first tenet of our Constitution gives the right to freedom of religion. And so there's absolutely nothing wrong with the Muslim faith. And the vast majority of Muslims are absolutely peaceful people. But just like any other religion, there are radicalized sects, both in Christianity, both in Islam, that do dastardly things. But we can't blame the entire religion for the radicals that exist inside of them. The same way we don't blame Christianity for the acts of groups like the Ku Klux Klan.
So to be governor of North Carolina right now, do you think you have the Republican Party behind you? I know Senator Tom Tillis endorsed your challenger.
He did, and I'm not interested in anything that Tom Tillis has to say. As far as I'm concerned, Tom Tillis has abandoned the base of our party. We're looking forward now towards a new Republican Party that's going to embrace a myriad of people across the board. Not just the old standard Republicans, as my opponent once said, of having a Republican Party of 50 years ago. It's now time to open our Republican Party up to everybody, to all those people out there who believe those conservative values like we do, who believe in limited government, who believe in individual liberty, who believe that parents have the right to educate their children, and all those great concepts such as that. And so the Republican Party is going to go through a change. We're going to drag it back to where it needs to be, a party that's here for everybody and not just here for the upper echelon folks like Tom Tillis.
All right, Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, in a dead heat with Josh Stein firm after grabbing the Republican nomination, and it's 8 months to the sprint to see if you'll become the first black governor of North Carolina. Thanks so much for joining us, Mark.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate you.
All right. Talk to you again. Listen, when we come back, I'll bring in the latest. Robert Hur is still speaking now. He's going back and forth defending his 400-page document. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Joe Biden knew the rules. You know he knew the rules. And Joe Biden told us he knew the rules. So, Mr. Herr, why did he break them?
Congressman, the conclusion as to exactly why the president did what he did is not one that we explicitly address in the report. The report explains my decision to the attorney general that no criminal charges were warranted in this matter.
I think you did tell us. I think you told us, Mr. Herr. Page 231, you said this. President Biden had strong motivations. That's a key word. We're getting to motive now. President Biden had strong motivations to ignore the proper procedures for safeguarding the classified information in his notebooks. Why did he have strong motivations? Because, next word, because he decided months before leaving office to write a book. That was his motive. He knew the rules. He broke them because he was writing a book. And you further say, and he began meeting with the ghostwriter while he was still vice president. There's the motive.
So guess what Jim Jordan built up to? $8 million. $8 million advance to do a book. So he brings his ghostwriter in, at which time, this is not my opinion. At which time he says, look what I just found, classified documents, and nobody knows I have them. He actually said that. And the reason why Robert Herr did not prosecute is because he said, I don't remember saying that. I don't remember saying this. They go, this guy's kind of old, forgets his when his son died, forget when he was vice president, forgot when he was reelected, didn't know when it stopped, didn't know anything. How can I probably, he'll come off so sympathetic and absent-minded, an elderly man who forgets things. So if you add that along with in 2017, or you think back, he's doing a book, and to do that book, you need information, and then you go get your notes for that information, which just happened to be in your basement, in your attic, in your desk. Also, there was another part that Jim Jordan had when he talks about having documents and trying to hide them from investigators and slide them in. That also came out in this. So would you look at it, Democrats, all they're asking questions are, is not really going after Robert Herr that I can tell. Plus, I'm doing the show at the same time this happened in real time. So you have Democrats saying Donald Trump is worse, and Republicans saying, is this really true? I cannot believe this is in there. And Robert Herr, if he was nervous, he should forget about being nervous because he's the sideshow. He is not the show. The show is the 400 pages. And the other show is Donald Trump comparing to what happened with Jack Smith in the investigation. And the thing is, they can no longer point to where the documents were kept. They were making a lot of hay with Donald Trump kept the documents in this back room or by the stage in Mar-a-Lago. They can't bring that up. Have you seen the pictures in this report? Not just in the garage we saw him backing in his Corvette. But you got to see it in the attic. You know, some of these boxes were so worn and corroded, they had to put them into bags because it would fall apart in their hands. That means it was there for decades. So I think with the Democrats are very happy now that this is not happening at 6 o'clock at night when Liz Cheney had her big January 6th hearing. I think they're happy this is happening at 11:30 Eastern time, where it started at 10 o'clock. It's been 90 minutes now. Because they want everyone to remember Joe Biden screaming at the State of the Union address, which they thought that was a positive. When you set your bar so low, and he had it together at least. And now they're going to go look at this report. But this is what they got to watch. The more questions they ask about the validity and sanctity and the accuracy of this report, the more they're going to get to quotes and findings. And you got to read it. I mean, it is absolutely terrible for the president. Brian Kilmeade Show, your call's next, 1-866-408-7669. Plus, I have more of the Robert Herr reports. Don't move. Big day.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
My team and I conducted a thorough, independent investigation. We identified evidence that the president willfully retained classified materials after the end of his vice presidency when he was a private citizen. This evidence included an audio recorded conversation during which Mr. Biden told his ghostwriter that he had, quote, just found all the classified stuff downstairs, end quote. When Mr. Biden said this, he was a private citizen speaking to his ghostwriter in his private rental home in Virginia. We also identified other recorded conversations during which Mr. Biden read classified information aloud to his ghostwriter. We did not, however, identify evidence that rose to the level of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Because the evidence fell short of that standard, I declined to recommend criminal charges against Mr. Biden.
Okay. That is Robert Hurd, part of his opening remarks, where he came out and basically expounded on what is in his report. A little bit defensive in the beginning, gave a little bit of him from my mom's from North Korea, my dad's from South Korea, came over after the Korean War, what he's been through, and then a little bit defensive in his four-page, five-page opening statement. That's a little bit of it. Here's a little bit more.
There has been a lot of attention paid to language in the report about the president's memory, so let me say a few words about that. My task was to determine whether the president retained or disclosed national defense information willfully. That means knowingly and with the intent to do something the law forbids. I could not make that determination without assessing the president's state of mind. For that reason, I had to consider the president's memory and overall mental state and how a jury likely would perceive his memory and mental state in a criminal trial. These are the types of issues that prosecutors analyze every day. And because these issues were important to my ultimate decision, I had to include a discussion of them in my report to the Attorney General. The evidence and the president himself put his memory squarely at issue. We interviewed the president and asked him about his recorded statement. Quote, I just found all the classified stuff downstairs, end quote. He told us that he didn't remember saying that to his ghostwriter. He also said he didn't remember finding any classified material in his home after his vice presidency. And he didn't remember anything about how classified documents about Afghanistan made their way into his garage.
Okay. What do you want him to do? Do you want him to go file for a conviction? This is your two choices. Memory's bad, or we're filing charges. For 40 years, you took classified documents when you're in your 30s, 40s, and 50s. When no one doubted your intellectual ability, maybe people doubted your ability, number one. Number two, you never stopped talking. You would even admit to that. You didn't before. And number three is this, and this is a side note. The guy doesn't stutter. The guy may have stuttered when he was a teenager, when he was a toddler, 8 years old. I'm not sure. But if you listen to old Joe Biden clips, even when he was vice president, he makes gaffes, but he doesn't stutter. Over the weekend, they said President Trump was making fun of his stutter. No, he was making fun of the fact that he can't get a word out and he stops himself in the middle. And most people make policy over his statements. And he still can't on his own take questions from an audience. Even the audience yesterday, but they keep pointing out different things. His best offense is mocking Donald Trump. So that's what's happening today. So Robert Hur's in the middle of it. In a way, I feel bad for it. I think on some level, I don't think he's a guy that wants to be famous. I'm sure he wishes he wasn't asked to do this. He has since resigned because of this. My sense is, too, he's affording himself quite well and probably do well after this. It's not as if he looks nervous and incompetent. He stands fully behind his report and has been able to stay out of politics. So that's pretty clear. I'm going to just pivot away from this for a moment. We're also monitoring the Intel chief's meeting with House Intelligence Committee right now, and it's impactful. Normally this would be front and center, but because of the Robert Hur report, that's taking precedence. I mind you can get it on our stream on Fox News on the app somewhere. But I think there's a few things going on. And that is China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, as well as our southern border, are a massive threat. And Chris Wray has indicated that he's never seen it quite like this at this level because of this. But on the sub-story out there that probably matters to most of you, whether you're a parent or a kid, it's what happened on TikTok. As you know, the House is moving legislation that's going to demand within 6 months they sell 80% of it, or it's just going to be banned on the App Store. Now, in certain colleges, they don't let it on the Wi-Fi. In certain states, they don't let it on any of your devices, like Texas. Montana, they don't let it on at all. To me, President Trump says, I'm torn. And I understand it a little bit. Remember what Facebook and Twitter did, Instagram, owned by Facebook, what Meta did. They shadow banned people who were pro-Trump. They poured money into battleground districts, to have battleground states. They made sure that they did everything possible legally to make sure Donald Trump didn't win the last election. So he says, if I get rid of TikTok, it's going to build up Facebook and Instagram. They do not deserve it. But in terms of the danger, it's clear. So he says, I'm out. And I appreciate that. Here's Congressman Kat Kamick about the danger. Cut 12.
Just a year ago, actually to the month, the CEO of TikTok came to Capitol Hill and said that they didn't really have a connection to China. He kept saying that they're based in the United States. Well, actually, they're incorporated in the Cayman Islands. But their parent company, ByteDance, has what is called a golden share that they have given to the CCP. A member of the Politburo of the Chinese Communist Party sits on the board of ByteDance. They have unfettered access. The source code is developed and maintained in mainland China. The algorithm is developed and maintained in mainland China. And the jig is up because the foreign minister of the CCP came out just 96 hours ago and said, guess what? We will never give up TikTok. We refuse. We're here to protect Americans' First Amendment rights. I'm sorry, but when the CCP starts talking about First Amendment rights, you know that they are full of it.
Right. They don't allow Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Are you kidding me? And now they're going for we have to push for our First Amendment rights in America. Nice try. In terms of the danger, politics aside, and this does go across party lines, cut 7.
I would just add that that kind of influence operation or the different kinds of influence operations you're describing are extraordinarily difficult to detect, which is part of what makes the national security concerns represented by TikTok so significant.
Okay. That's the intel, guys. That's the politicians. Anyone thinking clearly knows they expect about 300 votes to do exactly what I mentioned. In the Senate, they are lobbying so hard. There's so many young people, 170 million, most of which are young. They're so concerned about votes. People are backing off in the Senate. Can we please do the right thing for once? I'm going to come back and pull up some more Robert Herr highlights. It's still going on right now. Also, if I can get to it, the president announced his budget yesterday, at which time he vilified the previous tax reductions. I think we got to get some clarity here because numbers don't lie. And I think people and politicians do. The fact that they're saying that Donald Trump passed tax reform, Kevin Hassard and everybody else, but tax reform to help the rich belie the facts. And I just want you armed as this becomes part of the dialogue over the next couple of days. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
He didn't recall how he got the documents, and you knew that that would play into the Republicans' narrative that the president is unfit for office because he's senile. And the American people saw during the State of the Union address that that was not true. But yet that's what you tried to offer to them, and that's why they are having you here today, so that they can expand upon that narrative. And you knew that that's what was going to happen, didn't you?
Congressman, I reject the suggestion that you have just made. That is not what happened.
Let me move on.
Partisan
then,
politics,
sir. You are a member of the Federalist Society, are you not?
And fair.
Are you a member of the Federalist Society?
I am not a member of the Federalist Society.
But you are a Republican, though, aren't you?
I am a registered Republican.
Yes, sir. And you're doing everything you can do to get President Trump reelected so that you can get appointed as a federal judge or perhaps to another position in the Department of Justice. Isn't that correct?
Congressman, I have no such aspirations, I can assure you, and I can tell you that partisan politics had no place whatsoever in my work. It had no place in the investigative steps that I took. It had no place in the decision that I made, and it had no place in a single word of my report.
So that is the idiot Hank Johnson questioning the integrity of Robert Herr and the intentions of putting together the report. People don't like the conclusions, but no one really talked about the quality. I don't know if it's possible to take more time and do more than 173 interviews, interview 147 people, emails, text messages. They say collected over 7 million documents, including emails, text messages, photographs, videos, toll records, and other materials from both classified and unclassified materials over the course of 40 years. I don't know. I'm sorry that wasn't up to Hank Johnson's standard. Now Adam Schiff is also questioning the integrity of this case. So we'll hopefully be able to pull some of that back. On the same side, we're looking at the intel chiefs testifying now about world threats on Capitol Hill. Keep in mind, what I find so intriguing about these intel conferences, the Senate side is now on Fox Nation, which you're watching us on now, perhaps, is that it's really bipartisan. I mean, until the end, when Mark Kelly and Senator Ossoff came out and started talking about, well, if they only passed this bipartisan legislation on the border, we wouldn't have any problems. And then it was answered by Senator Risch, who says, you got to be kidding me. How dare you think that this bipartisan legislation is the only issue there's at the border? Your guy undid everything with 91 executive orders on day one when he took over the White House. Besides that, it was pretty intriguing and concerning. For the most part, you have Chris Wray saying, for the most part, he has never seen a more wider range of threats on the homeland since he got the job. And I imagine talking to some of his predecessors about what's it about. Meanwhile, in some of the highlights that we have from Robert Herr, Jim Jordan got into it. And he got into it because he looked at the report and realized Joe Biden got a huge advance for a book. And in that book, he needed intelligence documents to remind himself what exactly he did as vice president.
Mr. Herr, how much did President Biden get paid for his book?
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure if that information appears in the report.
Sure does. There's a dollar amount in there. You remember?
It may be $8 million.
$8 million. Joe Biden had 8 million reasons to break the rules, took classified information and shared it with the guy who was writing the book. That's why he did. He knew the rules, but he broke them for $8 million in a book advance. But you know what? It wasn't just the money. Joe Biden, here's this page 231, very next page. Joe Biden, in your report, Joe Biden viewed his notebooks as an irreplaceable, contemporaneous record of the most important moments of his vice presidency. He'd written this all down for the book, for the $8 million. And the next thing you say in your report is, quote, such a record would buttress his legacy as a world leader. You know what this is? It wasn't just the money. It wasn't just the $8 million. It was also his ego. Pride and money is why he knowingly violated the rules. The oldest motives in the book, pride and money. You agree with that, Mr. Herr? You wrote it in your report.
That language, and it does appear in the report, and we did identify evidence supporting those assessments.
Right. So, you know, when you're doing this over the course of 40 years, when you take a report, when you take a report from that in 2009, that General McChrystal has just called into the Situation Room, and he needs more troops and he needs more assets, and you write in that report that was written. You're right. I don't think so. I think he's overestimating. He's demanding too much, and I don't believe he's competent or whatever you wrote in your notes, but something similar to that. And then you take your notes home, and then you brag to your ghostwriter that a lot of times I left the documents there, but I copied over the notes onto index cards and brought them home. They never knew it. So Darrell Issa asked, and Darrell Issa, in his opening remarks, and I had to come back on the air, said, I'm not looking to ask you questions I know the answer to. I want to get to the bottom of this. And this is what he said.
So you went into cases thinking that you would succeed and you didn't. One might say you probably declined to prosecute ones that you might have either gotten a conviction or gotten a plea on. Would you say that's fair to say over your long career?
I think that's fair because I take the rules as set forth in the Justice Manual seriously.
However, I'm going to presume that you would never prosecute someone you thought was outright innocent.
Correct.
In this case, did you reach a conclusion that this man was outright innocent?
That conclusion is not reflected in my report, sir.
That was very well done. All right. James Comer spoke, too.
We've also subpoenaed the Department of Justice for audio recordings and transcript of President Biden's interview with Special Counsel Herr. These were due the morning of the State of the Union. Only this morning, a couple of hours before today's hearing, the Department of Justice finally provided the transcript of President Biden's interview with Special Counsel Herr. The timing is not coincidental. Although we've had little time to review the transcripts, from what we have seen, it is clear that the White House did not want Special Counsel Herr's final report to be released.
So we got the whole transcript of the hours of interviews. Can I just say fundamentally, if on October 7th I was president, and Israel was attacked in such a horrific way, worse since 1973, I would have told Robert Herr, can you come back tomorrow? Instead, he still sat with him for 3-4 hours. I'm glad he sat, but I would say, hey, listen, not going to work today. I'm still president. Jamie Raskin, the under definition outside Adam Schiff of a left-wing zealot, said this, and he of course brought up the comparison with Donald Trump.
This, my friends, this is a memory test. But it's not a memory test for President Biden. It's a memory test for all of America. Do we remember fascism? Do we remember Nazism? Do we remember communism and totalitarianism? Have we completely forgotten the sacrifices of our parents and grandparents and prior generations? While we play pin the tail on the donkey in this wild goose chase, all of these silly games, Donald Trump entertains authoritarian hustler Viktor Orban at Mar-a-Lago for the weekend, and Orban comes out to declare that if we indeed sleepwalk into another Trump presidency, Trump will, quote, not give a single penny to Ukraine. That's what all of this is about. It's about trying to pull the wool over the eyes of America.
So Robert Herr sitting there. He gives up a year of his life to do this thorough investigation. And Democrats talk about the State of the Union address and Donald Trump and Viktor Orban. I mean, can you at least pretend as if the person is there for a reason and ask him a question? I don't know who you are broadcasting to. Viktor Orban, lastly, I don't agree with everything he's done, but he is a member of NATO, just voted Sweden in as a member of NATO. He's part of our defense alliance, like Turkey is. Don't love Turkey's government, but you better believe that Erdogan and Donald Trump know each other. Why do they know each other? I believe that Donald Trump's got hotels there or a golf course. Saudi Arabia has had relations with every president since FDR. It doesn't mean that we think a monarchy where women have almost no rights is a great thing. Viktor Orban is running a situation where he got everybody's respect, at least Republicans' respect, when the influx of the Syrian refugees came in and Germany opened up their arms and destroyed their society and set their economy back without screening them. Viktor Orban put up a wall, fence wall, a barrier. That's who got everybody's respect. Hey, April 27th, I'll talk about this and anything else with Life Liberty and History Liberty and Laughs. I want you to go to BrianKilmeade.com, get some tickets right in Las Vegas in Henderson, Nevada.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.